Jed, why is Brown & Sharp such an iconic company? What was Brown & Sharp? Why was it so important in the development of American industry?
Well, they made the things that made everything else. You know, they made the machines that other people use to make products. So, for example, in the 1880s, a lawyer out in the Middle West wanted a way to package his new cereal. So he came to Brown & Sharp, and they developed with him the shredded wheat biscuit packager.
Brown was actually, in his own way, kind of a genius, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. He was off the chart, you know, preternaturally brilliant, really. You know, his schooling went as far as the local district school in Warren, Rhode Island, which is like the sixth grade. But his father had apprenticed both as a clockmaker and a jeweler. And so Joseph Brown built clocks with him from a very young age. I mean, from kindergarten age, you know. And as a result, he saw the mathematical challenges posed by getting gears to mesh and pendulums to swing, and he had a good feel for handling, you know, metal parts.
You know, you use Brown & Sharp as a lens to take us back to a time that those not familiar with Rhode Island's history will kind of find astounding. Providence was really the nation's Silicon Valley, and Brown & Sharp was sort of the Microsoft of its era. What made tiny Rhode Island such a leader in American industry and a city that was one of America's most prosperous?
Well, it was really cultural. There's a historian, Nathan Rosenberg, who describes the Providence of the 1800s as a center for technological convergence. It was where a guy who had an invention for a new sewing machine would come to find funding. And it was a place where that same guy, George Corliss, failed to find funding but developed new valves to harness steam engines more efficiently, you know. So it's the kind of place that drew smart entrepreneurs looking to do things because of places like Brown & Sharp that could do things for them. That, you know, Joseph Brown could manufacture just about anything, and people knew that.
It's interesting because during this era, Providence is also a magnet for people from around the world, immigrants. And we had jobs here in Rhode Island then for folks who would come. Now, the Sharps and the Browns were very strong Protestants. In fact, they even had some religious training at work. How did they deal with these generations of Catholic workers?
You know, there was actually the same tensions that existed in the larger community existed within the plant. But there was no prohibition against hiring Catholics. The Brown & Sharp never hired a black worker until the 1920s when it hired a fellow for the foundry work. I think people in the North often underestimate Jim Crow and segregation.
How was Brown & Sharp able to survive for so long during successive depressions, downsizings, and war, only to come roaring back?
Well, for one thing, the machine tool industry itself is famously cyclical. You know, there are good times and bad times. They would do things to keep workers on during slack times. They called them bridge periods. Even into the 1970s, they had a formal bridge program that tried to keep workers thinking, innovating, and producing during slack times.
We're talking to Jed Carbone, a historian, former Providence Journal reporter. His new book, Brown & Sharp and the Measure of American Industry, is a chronicle of the Rhode Island company that changed the machine age. The Sharp family's long been active in business and philanthropy in Rhode Island. We should note that members of the Sharp family have served on our board here at Rhode Island Public Radio. You know, the company often had a chippy relationship, to say the least, with its union workers. There was a long and bitter strike in the early 1980s with the International Association of Machinists that hurt both the company and its workers. Given hindsight, what are we to make of this?
You know, in 1982, the American machine tools industries collapsed just at the time that this bitter strike was ramping up and the workers were out. That year, machine tool orders fell 80%. And the reason the machine tool industry collapsed had nothing to do with the union or the management of Brown & Sharp, and everything to do with United States public policy on taxes, spending, tariffs, trade. And even if the workers had not gone on strike, they still would have been out on the street by 1982-83 because the machine tools industry collapsed for reasons having nothing to do with Brown & Sharp.
So do you think there's any way that Providence could be the seedbed for 21st century innovation in the same manner that we saw with Brown and Sharp in the 19th and 20th?
If we did, it would be in cahoots with a larger regional push, you know, obviously Boston, which was true of those days, too. I mean, Providence justifiably brags about its accomplishments in the 19th century, but New Haven, Hartford, Worcester, Springfield, Boston, they were all a part of that, too.
At one point, weren't companies in New Haven and Bridgeport actually trying to steal workers from Brown and Sharp?
Oh, more than once. Whenever times got really busy, yes. Henry Sharp Sr. got really upset during World War One when he looked in the Providence Journal, which he was a part owner of, on the board of directors of, and he saw a classified ad trying to get entice Providence machine tool workers to move down to Hartford. He let the people in Hartford know he was not pleased about that.
The book is Brown and Sharp and the Measure of American Industry. It's a great read. If you're interested in Rhode Island history, this is a book for you. We have Gerald, universally known as Jed Carbone, with us today. Thanks for coming in, Jed.
Thank you, Scott.